Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo and it's a pleasure to introduce Heidi McGough, who I actually went to school with. Hi Heidi.
Hi.
So Heidi is a singer primarily, but she's also plays musical instruments, but we'll go into that a bit more in a wee while. But she is visually impaired. So do you want to start by telling us a little bit about your visual impairment?
Okay, so I've been visually impaired since birth, but I did have some deterioration in my sight when I got into my late teens, early 20s, and it has deteriorated again since. I have albinism, and that means that I'm photophobic, so I can't take bright light, and I have astigmatism as well. So my eyes are moving all over the place, but it's not as pronounced as other people's. I can't see very far in front of me.
So you went through specialist ed, didn't you?
I did.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I went to St Vincent's. It was quite hard because I was only 4 years old when I started. I was just coming up on five because my birthday is the end of October. So we started September. And if you think that's young, I was actually meant to start at Easter, but I actually had meningitis. I nearly died. I was given my last rites by a priest, but I'm still here to tell the tale. So my school start date was delayed till I'd recovered. And yeah, it was... I think at first my mum was more distressed about sending me away than I was because I didn't really understand what was happening. I mean, we obviously talked about it, but I was 4 years old, for goodness sake. So it doesn't sink in. And I think I was probably okay up until the first night. Like, the first day I was okay, and then when I realised I was going to bed at school, you know, mm-hmm. It was all very strange. Yeah, I think it's quite hard to send a child away that young, and my mum really struggled with it. But that's just how things were done though in those days. I could have gone as a day pupil, but they decided it would be too much for me because all the travelling every day, morning and night. And they probably were right, probably would have been too much.
And you went right through, didn't you?
I did.
Do your O-levels, CSEs, and well, we were the last year to kind of do that, weren't we, and do the changeover year.
We had a funny year. We had a hybrid year. So we had, there was some O-levels, there was some CSEs, and there was some GCSEs.
It was an interesting year. So you've been musical pretty much all your life, haven't you? You've had an interest, haven't you? So do you want to tell us how that started? When did you realise that you really, you know, that you loved music and that, you know, you had a gift for it, had a talent?
Well, I mean, we always had the radio on at home, so I was always listening to the radio and singing along to ABBA songs and stuff like that, you know. And I remember that we used to go and visit my nan, where my nan lived. I used to play out with the other kids in the street. And we moved there, actually. We moved into their house when they moved. So when I moved, I already knew a lot of the kids there. And I used to get up on the wall and sing. They'd all sit on the floor and listen to me. It was like the wall was my stage. But I was proper temperamental. I was a right little diva. Some of the older ones would say, "Oh, Heidi, are you going to sing for us?" And I'd be like, "No, I don't feel like it today." So I'd only do it if I felt like it. I remember doing it at the Queen's Jubilee party, the Silver Jubilee, 1977. We went to the party at Manan's Street. We didn't do ours at our street at home. We did Manan's, and they had I don't know whether it was a competition, it was just a talent show. People could get up and do something, the kids, you know. And I got up and I recited a poem about a plant, which I can't remember now, and then I sang a song called Spring Is Coming. Yeah. And in front of all the people in the streets, there must have been well over 100 people there.
So I'm guessing you were in the choir at school. I think I remember you being in the choir at school.
Yeah, I was in the choir at school. And I quite enjoyed that, actually, because I loved how it sounded when we were all singing different things and harmonies and stuff. It used to give me goosebumps when it really worked, you know.
Mm.
It was brilliant. I loved it. And I started singing lessons at school when I was 8. I didn't ask. I was picked.
Mm.
So they'd obviously seen something in me. There was me and Adele, who there were probably some others as well. But I know we were only 8 when we started.
And you played the bassoon as well, didn't you?
I did, but actually was picked to do recorder lessons before that. And I remember sometimes we used to do little shows when we were sort of younger, I think. I remember us putting one on in the hall, and we did this hoedown thing on the recorder. So some of the girls would play in the desk and some would play in the treble. So started off, I remember doing that. And I remember having piano lessons with Mr. Wilson as well. But he was trying to get me to read sighted music. I just couldn't do it. Just couldn't see well enough to do it. It would take me too long to work out a note that I couldn't progress.
Mm.
And I feel like I'd have progressed with the piano a lot sooner if I hadn't been pushed into trying to read music. There weren't even large print. I was using my LVAs to try and read. It was silly, really, because by the time I'd worked out the next note, I'd forgotten the one before. So it just didn't work. But I could have been better on the piano if I hadn't been pushed to try to read music.
So when you left school, you went on to RNC, didn't you?
I did.
And the music journey continued there, didn't it?
Well, yes. I had done CSE music at school because that was what was on offer. We didn't get the option of doing an O-level or a GCSE.
Mm.
It was CSE, that's what you did. And I got a grade one. That's the best I could have got. But for me, I wanted what would be nowadays a recognisable qualification.
Yeah.
So I think it was in my last year at RNC, I asked if I could retake that, just do it at GCSE, which I really enjoyed doing. And it actually got me a little bit more comfortable with some school music as well, which was really useful, and some music theory. So I did that. I had lots of musician friends at RNC, and I was always involved in music that was going on, you know, extracurricular stuff. I was in a couple of bands and stuff. I played a bit of keyboards in some of them, sang in all of them. One band, they actually had me playing bass on 2 songs. Yeah, I learned the bass for Wild Thing and Every Day Is Like Sunday by the Smiths, randomly. They said, we haven't got a bassist, can you do it? I was like, I've never played a bass before. We just had a go, you know. But I did play, you mentioned bassoon before, I did play bassoon. I learned at school because I wanted to join the instrumental group at school.
Mm.
And Mr. Wilson said to me, we need an oboist or a bassoonist. So I said, well, I'll do bassoon then. So I learned bassoon, I joined the instrumental group. And then when I left school, Mr. Wilson actually allowed me to take the bassoon with me to RNC because it'd come on really well. I joined at home, I joined a Deeside Junior Wind Band, which was local Wirral and North Wales wind band for sort of, I don't know, 8 years old upwards, really. We had 16, 17 year olds in it. There was a string orchestra and the wind band, and sometimes we'd come together and do stuff together like a big orchestra. So that was at home. That was nothing to do with school. I was allowed to take the bassoon home at weekends to participate in that. So when I left school, Mr. Wilson said I could take the bassoon to RNC, and I continued for a little while anyway. I continued having lessons there.
We were so lucky. We had a very talented music teacher in Mr. Wilson, and very generous as well, because I was that oboist when you were the bassoonist. I was the oboist. Yeah. And again, let me take the oboe. And he did that with others as well, which was very generous of him, or generous of the school, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so after RNC, mm-hmm. what happened then?
I applied to go to another college, which was a mainstream college, to do a sound engineering diploma. It's actually called audio and visual design. So sound engineering was the core part of the course, but we also did some photography, television, digital recording, sort of MIDI and stuff like that, as well as working in the studio. So I was there for 2 years. That got me a BTEC National Diploma, which is like your equivalent to 4 A-levels. And it was really good because there was a lot of musicians on the course, so we got to, you know, mix and make music with other people again and learn a lot of valuable skills. I think a lot of singers don't know all the music tech stuff. They don't know about different types of microphones, microphone placement, about multi-track recording, about reverb and live sound. They just sort of get up and I know how to sing and that's what I know how to do. I don't know how to ask you to make me sound good, but I know what to ask for, and I think that's been sort of invaluable, you know, learning all those skills at, it was Sandwell College that I went to.
Yeah. And after that, so I know there's a long way to go. So.
Yeah.
So let's cherry pick some of the moments for you throughout your life that bring you through to the present day.
Okay. I could really do with my CV in front of me to prompt me.
So you did go to Liverpool Institute for Performing
Arts. Oh yeah, I did.
Arts, didn't you?
Yeah, that was later on. I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd done stuff in between going there. I'd gone to Stafford University to do social work and just hated it and just thought, I need to be doing music and I want my degree. Mm. So I got into Lipa. I was on the community arts music course, but again, it wasn't really what I wanted, and I wanted to swap onto the full music course and they wouldn't let me. But I had a lot of problems at Lipa with support or lack thereof. Their attitude was pretty disgraceful, to be honest. The RNIB had a meeting with them to try to put things and systems in place and to raise awareness, and they were shocked at their attitude towards me and towards the support that they should really have been giving. Now, the thing was, at that time, the DDA, as was, didn't cover... it didn't cover higher education.
So that's a disability discrimination act for anybody who doesn't know.
It's now the Equality Act. Mm. It didn't cover higher education. So they didn't have any, there was no legal recourse. We couldn't make them do anything.
Mm.
And I think it was the year after I left it, they came in that it covered higher education. A little bit too late for me.
Mm.
But I had... all my credits. I hadn't failed anything. I'd have done better in some areas, because the thing about Lipa is you do a course, but you do extra stuff as well. So there's dance, there was street dance, which I did, which is really cool. I really enjoyed doing that. But it was hard being the only VI person. It was very hard. And again, there was the attitude that I had to deal with. Mm. Trying to think what else there was. But when I left, I was still determined that I was going to get my degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the Open University and I found out that because I had all my credits for my first year and for part of my second year, because I'd completed a term when I left, I hadn't left in the middle of a term, that I could transfer onto an open degree, as they're called. With the Open University, you can do a named subject degree, or you can do an open degree where you still have to get enough credits for a degree, but you can mix and match your subjects. So I transferred all what I had at Lipa. I got accepted, got all my transfer approved, and I continued. I did a music technology course, which was really good. And then that was at level 2. And then to finish off level 2, Which is like your equivalent to second year at uni. I think I did a psychology course. And then I got to level three, which is equivalent to third year at uni, and I needed two modules at 60 credits each to get a degree with honours. And I did a music one, and there was another music one that I could have done, but it was completely inaccessible to me, you know, as a VI person. So I couldn't do it, it was gutted, but I had to find something else to do. So I think I did an English language course, which is called The Art of English, which was challenging but very interesting. And then I got my degree with honours, 2-1, yeah, with the Open University.
Great stuff.
Yeah, so it's good.
Come forward a bit. So well, obviously COVID has got in the way, as it has with lots of people. But before COVID, before the pandemic, you were singing, you know, performing a lot, weren't you?
I was out gigging regularly. Which I've been doing for a long time. Probably, I'd say I started doing it in April 2000 is when I started gigging properly as a solo musician. And I was going out with backing tracks. I was doing very well. And in more recent times, going to open mic nights, meeting other musicians and having friends who are musicians, and so working with them. But the thing about that is there is problems with working with other musicians. It can work sometimes, and then other times it can be they let you down, or they don't want to do the same songs that you want to do, or you go to an open mic night and nobody knows the songs that you want to do. So I decided that I needed to learn to accompany myself. So I thought, I need to go back to piano, because you know, it's what I'd sort of got the basics of it, and I'd been able to play keyboard in bands, and I knew enough piano, I suppose, and keyboard to write and produce songs, because I have written and produced songs at home. But actually singing and playing at the same time, actually learning to accompany myself on the piano, like doing an acoustic piano set or something, was something that I've never been able to do and thought it would be really good to be able to do. So I started to learn to do that, and also thought that it'd be good to be able to do a bit on guitar, and that actually the piano and the guitar are not that portable, so throwing the ukulele into the mix as well. And sort of like took on quite a lot there, really thought, if I can get, you know, a bit of a set together using a combination of those three mediums, that would be really good. So that's what I've been concentrating on. I was doing okay till I broke my wrist in the lockdown and I had to put the whole lot on hold. Not only was it that a physical barrier, but it did massively knock my confidence as well. So I've had to claw my way back. I've now got about a 40-minute piano set, which is really nice. And then I've got a few songs that I'm working on the guitar and ukulele, and I fully intend to expand the piano set, because I feel most at home, most comfortable on the piano.
So you said COVID, you broke your wrist and broke your arm, and you struggled, didn't you, through COVID, because you live on your own. And
I do, and my mental health wasn't the best. I was actually struggling with my mental health before COVID hit, and I had actually already self-referred myself for therapy, and I had to wait a long time to get it. I think I referred in the February before COVID hit, and I didn't get any help until October. I really struggled, because obviously the lockdown then made things 10 times worse. I think I picked up a little bit in the summer because, well, it's summer, isn't it?
It helps. And helps, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I think when it first started in the March, I was quite scared.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of a fight for survival, really. It was like, everyone's not allowed to help you, so what do you do? How am I going to get my food and stuff?
Yeah.
Because it was impossible to get a delivery slot. I'd always got my big shop online, go to the supermarket locally for bits. I was too scared to go to the supermarket because of social distancing. I knew that it would be impossible to do. And I had been once or twice and been shouted at by customers for not social distancing or not queuing in the right place or something.
Yeah.
And so that put me right off. And I was too scared to go to the supermarket. I couldn't get a delivery slot. A neighbour helped me out. He wasn't going, but his sister was going. But she just got what she could get, and it wasn't stuff that I normally buy. But I was grateful, you know, for the help. But,
yeah, of course.
I did have words with Tesco, and I miraculously did end up with a delivery slot. And I was accidentally put on the shielding list because I have albinism. That has no bearing on me needing to shield, but somebody thought it did. And with it, that's what I was told when I thought I'd got to the bottom of it. So they said, oh, we can take you off. And I said, no, it's okay, just leave me on, because I thought I'd get my delivery slot, which I'm not going to get if you take me off. And then that opened up that I was getting the Boris box, you know. And I got some one-off delivery from the local council as well that massively, massively helped. And what was the other thing? Oh, it meant that when there was going to be a vaccine, I'd be one of the earlier ones to get it. I was very keen to get a vaccine. But regarding the food deliveries, I decided that the Boris box came every week and I couldn't use everything. So what I did was, in my building, there are three flats. It's an old house that's been converted into three flats, and there's a communal area, sort of a vestibule in the front. And you can buzz people into the building without coming into contact with them. So I had all the stuff out in there. I put a sign up, said Heidi's Food Bank, and I had friends that I knew didn't have much money, who would not have been on the shielding list, who were not disabled, but would really have been struggling. And I told them, and they'd come round with their carrier bags, and I'd buzz them in, and they'd help themselves to Heidi's Food Bank. Aww. So it's nice, because it meant I could do something to help other people as well.
I think it really, you know, not in everybody, obviously, but I think it really did bring out the community spirit in a lot of people, didn't it?
Definitely.
Which was a good thing. So, you've had the vaccine.
I have twice.
You're here in Tynmouth on holiday.
I am, and I'm loving it.
And what does the future hold for you?
Well, I'm going to plug away now when I get back at getting some a bigger piano set together, because I absolutely adore doing the piano stuff. And knuckle down, get a few songs on the guitar and the ukulele, because I don't put as much effort into that, because it just doesn't seem to come as naturally as the piano. But I do like doing that. And just to get some work in the diary now, because I haven't recovered from the pandemic, you know, with work. Just haven't. So yeah. It's just nothing for so long. But I have got my New Year's Eve booked.
I was just going to say that. You've had some good news while you've been down here, haven't
I
you?
I have, yeah. So I got my New Year's Eve booked, and I also got asked to do an interview for the Nordoff Robbins Music Therapy Trust. They have a Facebook group, and they sort of do a live, I think it's once a week, and people sort of request songs, and then they have a guest singer who sings a bit, and they do an interview with them. So I've got asked to do that as well, so I'll be organising that when I get back as well. Exposure.
So I know that people are going to be asking, what kind of music do you sing? What's your thing?
My genre?
Yeah.
So I do 80s, 90s to present day rock and pop. That's my covers that I do. So when I'm out gigging, I'm obviously going to be predominantly covers. Occasionally I'll do my own stuff as well. And my own stuff is quite sort of produced synth pop, I'd say. But also, I've got some stuff that's just been done acoustically as well. And I think now that I can play the piano and accompany myself, I'm going to be writing some stuff. I've already got a couple of ideas. I've already started two songs. So I'm going to be writing a few on the piano so I can sing. So that'll be really nice. So that'll be something different to what I normally do. Mm. Yeah.
Who inspires you? Who inspired you musically, and who inspires you now? Who do you like listening to? And yeah.
So, I mean, when I was growing up, I was just massively inspired by so many in the 80s, so many bands and singers. I loved the Pet Shop Boys. I loved their music. I loved their production. I know Neil Tennant isn't the greatest singer, but it was all that production that really inspired me. I loved it. Kate Bush, as a female vocalist, really inspires me. Mm-hmm. I adore Adele. She can do nothing wrong. I love her. And Katie Tunstall as well. She's another one. I've been to see her live. She is phenomenal, amazing. So I love her. I used to be quite into Bjork as well, actually, because she's got a really unusual voice, and I love some of her production as well.
Mm.
And like Susie and the Banshees back in the 80s.
Yeah.
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 Because she was totally bonkers, and I just loved that. Yeah. Oh, Bjork's a bit bonkers as well, isn't she?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I guess so. Okay, so we're going to share one of your songs, and do you want to tell us what it is and if there's any background to it?
Yeah, it's a song called Dreamtime, and it's quite unusual in that it's not just your bog standard love song. I call it a winter love song. It's got a lot of winter imagery in it. It's basically about, well, I fell for a guy at college when I was at Sandwell College doing my sound engineering, and it was December. And I remember after Christmas coming back, you know how that January time's like, oh, I mean, nowadays I hate January, it's my worst month of the year, and a lot of people just hate it. You get that seasonal adjustment disorder and all that, you know. And this was about being in love at that time of the year, so it was like everything was magical, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what the song's about. It's got all that winter imagery in it. So it's called Dreamtime, and I've rhymed Greenwich Mean Time with Dreamtime.
So before we hear that, Heidi, do you want to tell us if people want to listen to any more of your music? Do you want to tell us how they can do that? Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on SoundCloud, and you can do a search for Heidi Singer Wirral. You can find me on YouTube, and you can do a search for Heidi Singer Wirral.
There's a theme here, isn't there?
Find me on Facebook, and you can search for Heidi Singer Wirral. That will come up, Heidi Purple Room Wirral, but the search is still Heidi Singer Wirral. And I am on Instagram, and I do put the odd video up on Insta, so that's... search for Heidi Singer Wirral. And don't make the mistake of writing Heidi Single Wirral, which somebody once did. I am single, but I'm not putting it out there that much. So, Heidi Singer Wirral, if you want to find me on any of those platforms. I think that's all of them, yeah. Yeah.
And obviously people can message you through Instagram and things like that. But if somebody was interested in hiring you for a gig, how do they go about that?
Well, you can... message me on Facebook, which many people do. You can message me on Insta if you find me. And also, is it right to give up my email address?
Yeah, of course it is. So, feel happy to.
Heidi@thepurpleroom.com is my email address, and you can just send me a little email there.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thanks ever so much, Heidi. It's been good to hear about your story, and good luck for the future.
Well, thank you. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do this, and I hope you all enjoy it, and I hope you enjoy the music.
Every morning mist across the bay, and I see clouds that have Eureka.